Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixel Chicken Team Up. I'm your host, Stryker, and with me I have Johnny.
Yeah.
And I have Jack.
Hello, hello.
He is back. This is part two of our E3 special. Probably be a little bit shorter than our first E3 special because of all the conferences and everything, but we are short Phil this week. We still don't quite know where he is. We just know he's not here.
Apparently a bird stole his ice cream in San Francisco.
Yeah, to provide you with a news update on Phil, a seagull stole an ice cream cone out of his hand, evidently, in San Francisco. So, anyway, if any of you San Francisco people see Phil, just give him a holler.
San Francisco fans?
Yeah. Johnny.
Yes.
How the F are you?
I'm effing nice. E3's over. Day two was a fart. I beat The Witcher 3. I beat the story the night of the last recording, which I didn't expect to do. I just kind of kept playing. I'm like, oh, this is the ending.
Were you satisfied with the way it ended?
Yes.
Good.
But, I mean, I thought everything else was better, but everything else was pretty outstanding. Mm-hmm. Just the entirety of, like, when the story sits you down for Act 2 and 3, it's like, it might as well be like an 8-hour grand finale kind of thing, and it's just fucking incredible. Play The Witcher 3.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm excited to get towards the end. But at the same time, I am afraid of trying to rush myself.
I'm sad that it's over. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's all this open world stuff I haven't done. And mm-hmm. I don't have any side quests left, but I still have contracts I could do. And I'm sure there's, like, little teeny side quests around. And maybe there's, like, one or two somewhat substantial ones, but all the important ones are done. So it's like, you know, I was thinking I was going to save the world to be unexplored for when the expansions come out so that I can, you know, go back to having some substantial story stuff to do while exploring the rest of the world. And but at the moment, just the idea of having this, you know, somber, because it rewinds the, from the ending, it rewinds time and it says, you know, go back to the open world, do whatever. And so it's like, after that point, yeah, I'd seen the credits roll, I'd seen the ending, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
Because they remove, like, all of the story characters after you beat the game. Everything is, like, no longer
so sad.
In the world.
It's, like, empty.
Yeah.
So it's just a weird feeling, and then you gotta, like, so it's like, the only thing I can do now is do, you know, kill monsters, live a Witcher life, and get gear.
At least it's better than, like, the ending of the first two Dragon Age games.
Yeah.
You beat the game, stay in the camp.
Yeah. You can walk around and boot up DLC from here.
Really? That's how it...
Dragon Age 2 did that?
Origins did that, and 2, like, you're stuck in the mansion, like, at the end.
What's the point of that?
Like, you just couldn't go back out into the world.
You could talk to your companions and begin DLCs.
I don't even know why, because I think no matter, like, what you do in those games, there's not dramatic enough of an ending where it wouldn't make sense for you to be revisiting game world areas.
Huh. But, that's weird.
Yeah.
That was a weird time in the games that when, like, so many games started becoming open world. There was a lot of games that just would just end and then you wouldn't be able to explore the world anymore. I always thought that was really weird. I'm glad that that doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah. It's even more frustrating. I think those two were especially frustrating because there were a lot of games that just ended and they were done, mm-hmm. right? You couldn't even do anything. Like, it wasn't like you could explore the world, but you also weren't just confined to a small space. Like,
yeah.
The KOTOR games, they ended and they were done and you never touched it again. Like,
yeah.
That's weird.
But, I mean, I think that there's a place for cutoffs in, like, open games. And I also think that there's a place in, like, because, you know, with The Witcher 3, it feels weird being able to still play because the story was so substantial. Mm-hmm. But with, like, more sandboxy kinds of open worlds, I feel like that would be retarded. And that's kind of, what did Fallout 3 do? Fallout 3 rebooted or rewound time a little bit too, but it had a horrible.
Do you remember Red Dead Redemption? Because I always felt that was kind of set along the same lines.
Well, Red Dead Redemption
made more sense though.
Yeah, it made more sense. But I mean, after the fact, when you are Jack and
spoilers.
Oh come on! when you're Jack and you are free to go, and you have that like one mission.
Yeah.
And then after that...
That nobody knew about.
I thought that was, like, a really, like, cool way
It was a great ending. It was just... It felt sad after everything that happened. Like,
I was super sad.
I was going to use that as an example, and I feel like... Because no matter what, when a super linear... Or not linear. Like, when a heavily story-based open-world game ends, there's always that lingering, like, sadness. Mm-hmm. Because that's the exact same way I felt with Witcher. And Red Dead did it best because, like, you kind of have that regardless of what they did. Yeah. So having it, like be even more somber and, like, just like, oh, like, because it's still continuing. And just
and
you don't really have any need to play, but it means, it means quite a lot after the credits.
It was a ballsy move.
It was really ballsy.
And they switched the character, which is just... It's crazy to think about now.
Yeah. The game's over. Here's a new character.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I thought it was like a really cool way to just transition from having it make sense that you're still playing the game.
Right? Yeah.
Like, it was a cool way to deal with that and still have a dramatic ending.
Because most games just that have heavy story base, they're like, we didn't think about that. Rewind time.
Yeah, it was definitely... I don't mean to say it like it's negative. I just meant it in the way that we were talking
it's
about
how it's sad. As fuck.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't know if I want to play it.
Seriously, I did that. I played Red Dead. I got Jack. I did my mission. And then it was just kind of credits rolled. I ran around for like a second. And I was like, too sad. But
I think I just got angry and went and fucked shit up at that, like, eastern coast town where all the
like the kind of swampy, like, is that what you're talking about?
No, like the place where the cars
gotcha.
Like the ship comes in, like where the bad guys were from. Like, I went and just fucked that town up for an hour, and I was like, this is how I'm ending this.
Yeah. If you sit on the rooftop with your automatic pistol, there's, like, a certain spot where you're just invincible, and I killed, like, 800 people, I think. I killed more people than should have logically fit in that town.
Like, you killed the population and then plus some.
Yeah, some more came in. They're like, oh, nice town. Oh,
this town's nice and empty.
We finally got here by boat.
Time to settle down.
6 years to get here. Oh, shit.
That game.
You killed my dad.
I didn't like Jack's voice. This is my one complaint about that game, and I've told many people before. I probably said it on the podcast, but I spent so much time 100%ing that game to get the Legend of the West outfit, the sweet duster you get for doing everything. Or I think close to everything. Like all the hunting.
Single thing.
Okay. So I got it. But by the time I got it, there was literally nothing to do. And they don't have like any sort of like new game plus or anything where you can like carry over at least the outfits.
Yeah.
So you start over and it's just like it's all gone.
There was no unlock connection to multiplayer, was there?
No. Multiplayer unlock.
It was all its own separate.
The multiplayer was weirdly fun.
That's a perfect way to describe it. Just weirdly fun.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect it to be, but I just had so much fun just playing that game online.
You start out and you're like, this is kind of boring, and then like 3 hours later you're still playing.
Especially if you just like hook up with some friends and like just go around doing those like raid missions where you're fighting baddies.
That was to the end of my Xbox, or right after my Xbox Live days, where like I hadn't been playing my Xbox much, and it was, you know, it read for me like twice. So it was barely holding together, bucket of bolts, game comes out, and I make sure I beat it before I, you know, pawn the stupid thing off, which I somehow did. I actually had to open it up and like fix the disc tray and stuff. But anyways, the Xbox Live community was just like, you know, none of my friends were playing the game for some reason. Like, Xbox Live just kind of died for me in 2009,
mm-hmm.
or sometime before it. And I was alone. People picked up that game late.
Just a lone wolf in it?
Yeah, and I don't know. It was. I had a good time, but I didn't put in near. I didn't get the experiences I wanted to get out of multiplayer because it would have been a game I would have loved. But
speaking of gaming
solo.
Sadness, there's nothing more sad than getting on a game that like we had so much fun with, and there's just nobody there anymore.
Yeah,
you just feel like you're the only person in the world playing.
Well, then there's shit like Marble Blast Ultra, which apparently you can't even buy it on Xbox Live anymore, and there's still a community of people who kept it installed and play it online on Xbox Live.
Good for them.
There's always just like one person online, like.
Just one dude who has like 700 hours in Red Dead Redemption. She wants to be on the show. So I guess with that said, we'll get into some of the stuff. We're going to talk about our kind of like our five favorite things that we saw at E3. We'll each have our own little list and then like our biggest surprise. But before that, there is a little bit of stuff that's happened. Some of the stuff that we didn't get to talk about is in depth. In the first episode, and then other things that have happened since then. So, Johnny, you mentioned that you kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the Nintendo conference stuff, because we just quickly touched on it, and then were upset and sad.
Yeah.
So we didn't really talk much about it.
It was just kind of shocking, and we didn't have much time left, so...
But there still was good stuff that happened.
Yeah, the negativity still is there.
Nakedivity, I think. Interesting.
I didn't mention three things. Okay, first of all, Nintendo dropped the ball because they actually announced that Fatal Frame was coming. They skipped the last one. They did not localize Fatal Frame 4 on the original Wii because that was during that time where Nintendo said, Japan, nobody in America wants to play games from there. I don't know. So, you know, there's petitions and stuff, and it just never happened. And it was apparently a really good game. Fatal Frame 5 gets announced, and it's, people thought that Nintendo would be able to put it out now, but they didn't. What?
You got something to say?
No. No. I'm laughing at something that I shouldn't. I don't know why, just go ahead.
Okay. they actually released a trailer for Fatal Frame 5, you know, gave it a subtitle, an English American subtitle, and gave it a launch window, and of this fall. So we get a fucking Fatal Frame game. These games average a Metascore of like 90. Like they're really fucking good.
Which iteration is this? That's going to be localized.
Fifth one. Fourth one we never got.
Do you ever play any of those games?
No, I've never played any of them.
Fantastic.
I've heard amazing things. I've never played one though.
They're really fun. Like. Experience to play like on the couch with multiple people, like all horror games are that way,
right.
Kind of. But this
I
one
have
especially.
To play them that way. I can't play horror games by myself. I'm the biggest horror game pussy that there is.
That's fair.
I'm calling it like it is.
I don't know. I might know a few people that are probably more, but then again, I haven't seen it. So
I would hope that there's some out there, but I really don't know.
I had my friend Josh sit down and play Fatal Frame. I actually, none of us had played it before, but we knew he was totally just afraid of of anything spooky in games. He'd like play a game that's not horror at all and be like, dude, that part was so spooky. He'd be like, no, what?
But see, you're thinking like how stupid that is, and I'm thinking that sounds familiar. I do that.
We start up Fatal Frame 3. I buy it at GameStop blind, because that's what we did during our summers, we just blind purchase PS2 games.
Yeah.
And we set it up on the projector, got it loud on the sound system, and, you know, the three of us were watching. And you're in this abandoned Japanese manor place, and you're walking around, you got your camera, and you're walking really slow. And all of a sudden, you know, we keep walking, we see some really spooky shit, and then this ghost with a big old butcher, or a big fat fucking knife... just comes out of nowhere and starts moving up kind of slowly, but we're walking even slower.
And then so if you walk backwards, you're going even slower
than
your normal
it's tank
pace.
Controls, like old Resident Evil.
Right.
So you do like full rotation. So you know, we're like screaming, and we can't get her to move fast enough, even though she could totally outrun this stupid ghost. It's like she doesn't see it or something. And so Josh just fucking... pause it and throws the controller across the room and just walks out. I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing it.
Which Josh?
Searle. So, I mean, as it turns out, if you hold down the X, like, it kills you. It stabs you, and then it's like, well, that's the prologue, and she wakes up or something.
Okay.
But, like, you don't need to be stabbed by it. You can, like, continue that little part. If you hold down the X button, she does a little jog. Like, that's how you get around most of the game. But having not known that, and they don't tell you, it was terrifying. Because you're like, oh, fuck, I should be able to outrun this, but I can't. There's something about, like, the psychology of just, like, not being able to move at the speed that this human being should be moving is just like, no!
Do they? So what platforms were the other ones on?
They were all PS2.
All PS2.
And they looked fucking awesome. Like, for PS2 games, they still look good.
And did they all have the same, like, premise of the having to take pictures or...
Yeah, they...
time that picture.
So they all have this same setup where it's all, like, ancient Japanese spirits and type stuff. Like, but they all have a sort of a different setting. Like, in the second game, it's two twin sisters who get lost in the woods. And they find this...
Count me out.
This ancient...
That's all it takes. In the woods? Nope.
They find this abandoned, ancient, like, village. And they go through it. I don't know why. And then the third game is this lady's fiancé died. And she keeps having nightmares. And in her nightmares, she wakes up in this old, giant, like... Japanese castle mansion. It's called the Manor of Sleep. It's like an old giant manor, and she keeps waking up, and she continues her progress. And so you'll wake up and walk around her apartment and do some real life stuff, and when you go to bed, you have to fight it again. But every game you find the camera obscura, which is this camera that has the ability to combat ghosts. So ghosts will appear. They get real close, and you have to get up as close of a photo as possible to do critical hit damage, a fatal frame. It's a great concept.
Yeah, it is. It's an incredible concept. So you can't... So the game inherently makes you get, like, as close as possible to these...
Yes.
Spirits and ghosts and things.
And you got to let them come to you.
But that's only during combat, and it works sort of like a boss fight, and... The all the spooky stuff going on, you want to try to capture as much as you can, because if you see a ghost appear for a second, fucking, like, hammering someone's hand into the wall or something, you're like, ooh, what's that? And you gotta whip out your camera and take a snap before it disappears, and you'll get points. So you want to catch everything creepy going on, because you'll be rewarded for it. But that also means that you have to be brave enough to be like, there's something spooky in this room, I'm gonna go.
Yeah, like, if you see, like, some, you know, like, ghost, like, crawling away from you, going, like, somewhere else, you're gonna want to follow it, because there's gonna be something that happens, you can take a snap.
And you need the points
that
to
goes
survive.
Against all of my horror game instincts.
It's just, it's one of the, I mean, not enough people have played this series.
How many of them have been localized?
3 out of 4. Okay. So they did them all on the PS2, and they were localized by Namco or something. But then they went to the Wii for the fourth game, and that was when Nintendo's like, which was stupid. So, I'm really looking forward to this. The camera in this game is controlled by the gamepad, which is very cool.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is actually one of the first times there's been a gamepad concept for the Wii U in use that seems... plausible.
That just kind of makes sense, it seems like.
Yeah. The only game I have that I liked the gamepad mechanics for was the Wonderful 101. I liked.
I've heard as much.
That was good, yeah. But that was more... I mean, it was like the 3DS screen, or the DS touch screen in terms of how they used it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, you just draw in, like, the stuff that you needed to have happen, and, I mean, it worked well in tandem with the other stuff that you were doing.
Yeah, Wonderful 101 was a pretty cool game.
I love the touchscreen functionality in Mario Kart, because you just honk your horn.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get real peeved.
Nintendo made full use of the touchscreen in their first party titles.
So sometimes I get, like, real peeved during a Mario Kart race, and I feel like I'm gonna, like, just, you know, honk on the horn, and it's like, bang, bang. It's like, this isn't satisfying.
Yeah, or it's like Wario's, and it's like,
Is it really?
It's like a, yeah, it's something like.
I didn't think about it. I just believed.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I think so. Right?
Just fart at your competition.
Pretty sure.
I mean, like, I guess wasn't like half his moveset based off of that in Smash Bros.
Yeah, doesn't he literally fart in Smash Brothers is one of his moves? See, it just sounds right. I think.
Yeah. You know, I didn't really think about this, but Nintendo's first-party games are using the gamepad and touchscreen less than the third-party games.
That's weird, because like for Wii, the regular Wii games, it was like the opposite. You know, they were the first ones to like fully implement them and use them well, and then the third-party games just kind of followed suit.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, I mean, it's really weird because there were all those articles about, I think, Nintendo devs mentioning that, like, the reason why it's not doing that well is because third-party devs don't want to make functionality for the gamepads too, you know, in the way or whatever. And then you also heard third-party devs like Ubisoft saying, oh, we're never going to make a Nintendo game because, you know, we don't like the Wii U.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of in a weird spot with as far as third-party developers go, because it's like the only console left over, basically, technology-wise. You know, it's similar in architecture and processing power to the last generation. So it's like they have to be able to justify, appointing a development team for one single console only.
But then you get, like, Deus Ex Human Revolution apparently had some really good use of the gamepad.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And, like, all of Bayonetta 2, you could control the entire game from the gamepad. I mean, I don't know why you'd want to, but they sat down and they're like, we need to innovate with this thing. And, like, what the fuck does it do in, like, Smash Brothers and Mario Kart and Mario 3D World and... Like, I don't even remember. Does it do something? Is it just like a map?
Yeah, I'm great with games not like using it, because that on those games it's just really easy for me to use it as a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the time, if I want to play something on my Wii U, I don't even fucking use the TV. I just like sit on the couch and play some on the iPad. Like, it's great.
Yeah, I love that. That part's awesome.
They don't need to use the.
I really don't.
It's always like an option kind of thing, and it's not like I'm like hungry. I need more gamepad. I love that thing, but it's like, you know, it was an expensive gimmick that they designed, and I knew it wasn't going to work. But like, I would have been happy if they had some cool.
I don't mind if they just use it for like what you said, like just having just being able to play it without using the TV is
just a quick
feature.
Mario Kart.
Yeah, just a quick race.
Maybe I forgot that I could do that. Holy shit!
Tropical freeze level.
Because I don't want to like plug in the thing and have to hook up my HDMI and unplug the PS4. It's
super convenient. Just carry it around with you.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Was there any other Nintendo ones you wanted to talk about?
Yo-Kai Watch is being localized this December on the 3DS.
So it is it's December. Holiday release?
I believe they said December was the month, and I don't know if it had a date.
Now, keep in mind, Johnny lies.
Yeah.
We can't have the
fact check. And I don't have the fact check on this one, so...
I don't have to fact check it?
That being said, I don't know which Yo-Kai Watch the game is going to be.
Yeah, because isn't there like a
There's
few?
Three.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Oh, it's three. I don't even want to look it up, though.
So let's see.
I mean, it doesn't matter, because it's the first one we get. Like,
Well, it seems to me like the next two are just, like, upgrades, kind of.
Yeah.
It's not like you need to have them all be...
This game looks just adorable.
It's cute as hell, man. Dude, you know Ni No Kuni, right?
Of course.
Just by the Ni No Kuni devs.
Oh, really?
Ni No Kuni?
Are you guys having any Ni No Kunis?
I watched... there's a podcast I listen to, a 4-player podcast, and they're all from Texas, and that's how they say it. And there's like a few of them that are just really into it.
That's funny to
me. They were like actively making fun of each other for pronouncing it that way, but they just kept doing it. You play some Ni No Kuni this week?
So according to this, it's holiday 2015, and Johnny once again has let us down.
What? It's holiday 2015?
Well, holiday 2015 could be a Thanksgiving holiday. Could be.
Oh. Could be Columbus Day.
Could be Columbus Day.
Oh, didn't we get like an official title? Did we not talk about the last podcast? Did we talk about how Fire Emblem got a real title?
Yeah, not if.
Yeah, it's not if anymore. It's what is it?
It's funny because there's a Shin Megami Tensei game called Shin Megami Tensei If, which was based off of some British film called If. .. And so it's like, what's up with the...
To answer your question, I don't remember us talking about that.
Okay.
No, we didn't talk about Fire Emblem at all, and I was going to mention that. That was one thing in the Nintendo press conference. I didn't really pay attention to the trailer that much, but what I did catch was like, holy shit, this story's going to be really good.
But they didn't say anything about like what edition we're getting, did
no.
they? Because that's like what at this point, that's what I'm interested in, is I want to know if we get like the all-in-one edition, because they should really just localize it like that.
I think that we will. That's my hunch, because we're getting it so far after Japan.
Well, I didn't
Japan
know
gets that complete edition before we get it at all.
I'll be real peeved if I have to pick an edition. Like, I just want... Yeah.
Well, it's 2016 for us. Japan gets the complete edition at the end of this year, I think. Like, the game comes out shortly for them.
What game are you talking about?
The new Fire Emblem. So, the new Fire Emblem's got this bullshit new...
Fire Emblem
Fates? It's like
Fates.
Pokemon. Is that what the new title is? Fire Emblem Fates?
For 3DS? Fates.
Yeah. So they're June releasing 25th? It with editions like Pokemon. Like you get a black version.
Oh, is that why it's got two different covers here?
Yeah, and it's got like a different story campaign in each one. Like it's actually different.
Oh, that's weird. It's awful. It's truly horrendous. Because
do you have like the option to get it as one complete set?
Well, there will be after in Japan after they got it. Like, or did they get it already? Or are they getting it?
They're getting it.
It
like
says June 25th. So
okay, so they're getting it very soon, or they're getting it, and then later there's going to be an edition released which has both of those two campaigns in it, and then it will have like a third campaign which will be available as DLC to people who bought.
So are they releasing both campaigns or both versions on this? They're both releasing on the same day.
Yeah, they're releasing so that like the black version and the white version, and then later I guess you can buy the other campaign as DLC. And,
or you can get it all in one complete.
Yeah, and then you can also, like, so if you bought white version, you could buy the black version campaign.
Oh, I get
and then
it.
Later they're going to release, like, a third campaign as DLC as well. But they're also going to release, like, an all-in-one edition, is my understanding. And we're hoping that since we're not getting it localized very soon, relatively, that we'll just get the all-in-one.
Yeah, because it says 2016 for North America. So.
Yeah, it's gotta be. Because there's no way people are gonna shell out the cash for two different versions of Fire Emblem. And it's a dumb system. Like, they got a lot of dumb marketing systems in Japan.
To be honest,
some
I'm cool, surprised that
some are ridiculous.
More companies haven't tried the Pokemon strategy.
But it doesn't work
like
for
more,
this kind
this
of game.
This is more different.
Oh, yeah. I get you. I mean,
because, like,
sense.
The difference in a Pokemon campaign was, like,
different
this time...
creatures.
Well, it was, like, you in some of them, it was, like, you were fighting one team versus another, like, bad guy team, and it just flip-flopped, and there's, like, a different, like, last boss, essentially.
With this game, it's the same story. There's two warring factions, and one is, like, clearly evil, and one is, like, clearly good. And each game is basically... picking your faction. It's like, if you pick the evil one, it's the black edition. And it's like, and I don't know if that's how the story plays out. I'm sure there's lots of good characters on that
side. I'm sure there's shades of gray.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, I had clear. No idea the Fire Emblem series had been around as long as it did.
Yeah, what, 7 was the first one we got, just called Fire Emblem.
1990 was the first release.
Yeah, like, but we didn't get, we got like.
Was Fire Emblem 1 really 1990? I thought it'd
be, it says first release Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light, April 20th, 1990.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't know when it started, but we got the first one we got localized as Fire Emblem was like Fire Emblem 7 or something on the GBA.
Yeah.
GBA. And we got it like after Super Smash Bros. Melee.
Oh, wow.
Because that's how, I don't know if you've noticed, but that's how Nintendo kind of tests the waters for bringing back games or localizing games, is they put a game in a Smash Bros. And then they
see how people react to it.
To the characters and stuff. So they had Roy and Marth in Melee, and they're like, oh, okay, people are into this. And then so they gave us.
Interesting. That makes sense. You can definitely tell you could tell how old this is just by looking at the cover. Like, just look at that art. Pretty like, great. That's just the.
Dude, I want like a collection of games that look like that.
They released is that Shadow Dragon?
Yeah, Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light.
They released like a remake DS version of that game like a few years ago, or several years ago now, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's an awesome series, and the Awakening was a departure, sort of, for the series.
It was exactly what they needed to do.
Right? Yes.
Like, it was the step that needed to be taken to to make the series not just be old and outdated.
Because like, all the games had cool stories and, like, simple tactics gameplay that was really fun, but they were definitely, like, the same thing over and over again. But yeah, Awakening was fucking awesome, and this game
is an amazing experience.
Looks to be like story wise, this new one could be even better. Like
story wise, I don't know what I think about some of the mechanics changes that have kind of been talked about, but I don't really care. Like I'll get used to it. I know I will. But,
yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Was that it for the Nintendo?
Let's see. Fire Emblem, Yo-Kai Watch, Fatal Frame, and we got a Xenoblade release date, which was good. So there
what was the release game date? First.
What, December 9th something. That's right. I don't know if you will need to beat the first. I mean, I want to. I want to as well.
I'm sure it's not necessary because is it even like a? I don't even think it's a direct.
No, in fact, I've got the feeling that other than, like, gameplay and style, sure it's going to have, like,
which one's Xenoblade? Because I know you told me about it before. Is that the one with the big, giant things?
Yeah, it's one where the world is literal gods that impaled each other.
Right. Like two titans. That's so cool. Like a mechanoid and, a bionic one, like, have impaled each other.
That's awesome. I really think that's
sweet. The sad part is that the sequel isn't set on that. It's just set on, like, Earth. That has been like deep future Earth. That's like all destroyed.
Is it? I haven't been looking too much into X.
Yeah, you're like in America.
It supposed to be like actually in the same setting or like the same world? Like the same.
It's the same universe. I believe that was said.
Because like, why is it like if it's not the same setting? Why is it even Xenoblade? Why isn't another Xeno game?
Because it probably uses the Xenoblade weapon or lore. There's probably some minuscule plot device.
All the lore
in
Xenoblade was like based on the setting.
I know. There's probably some stupid plot device that'll bring it all together, and the games won't be nearly as good. But
sure has a cool cover.
I mean, I don't have a negative opinion about this. I'll be into it, but
I'm sure I'll be into it too. But I feel like you can't really top what they had. And
oh, I didn't know it was already
out. I'm about
out
45 hours into Xenoblade.
It's already out in Japan, Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Wait, what?
Yeah?
What was the release date in Japan?
April 29th, 2015.
Huh. I didn't know about that.
That's the thing about Japan. That's why I'm like, Persona 5 is going to come out a few months before the US version.
Yeah.
And it's gonna kill me, because Japan's going to get it, and they're not going to say a fucking word, because they never do.
Yeah, that's weird. Like, it's weird to look at games, and they've been out for, like, 3 months or 2 months now, and you don't hear anything about it.
Yeah.
Anyway. What else? Soma. I have that written down here. You mentioned did they show like, more gameplay of it?
They did, but I didn't watch it, so I don't know why I said it.
Oh, cool.
So we'll just skip that segment.
Okay. So one of the things...
Oh, no. Replacing Soma, something we didn't write down is the Gone Home people are making a new game that they showed off on a space station. And both Firewatch and Soma make it look like mediocre, but whatever.
Everybody's making space stuff. Isn't it like Dean Rocket Hall, the guy who made DayZ, doing a space?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that. There was a trailer in one of the press conferences, maybe Microsoft.
Are they ever going to finish DayZ?
No. they're not going to finish any sandbox game. But Ion is the name.
I don't think Dean Rocket Hall is working at, like, what is it, Bohemia or whatever?
Yeah.
He doesn't work for them anymore. He left to make, like, his own thing.
Yeah, didn't he leave, like, a while ago? Like,
he basically collected his big sack of money, and he's like, sweet, I'm going to make another game.
I mean, I think he, like, what he said was, I think that the guys have this in hand, and I don't want to just be working on the same, because he had been working on the mod version of the game forever, right. And then he worked on, like, a full release.
I think it makes sense for someone like that to move on to something, because I think in a lot of ways, they're just kind of directing where they want things to go, and then it's like, okay, you guys do it now. So, I guess they don't need to be there through the whole thing.
Especially in this case.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so this Ion game is like DayZ, but in space and, like, realistic. That's what I gather. Like, it's like, you know, realistic NASA kind of stuff, but, like, further in the future. And you have to do...
Are they using the Arma engine for it?
Is it still...
DayZ's on its own, I believe.
Is it on its own engine?
Yeah,
that's why. That's why
but it was still being made by Bohemia. I think, but, like, he went and worked at Bohemia. They're like, we want you to make a full release of this, but I don't think he's working at Bohemia anymore.
No, he did say that he's been done with that.
Who is he, like, under, like, a publisher's umbrella right now?
You know, I'm so just, like, if it was at the Microsoft press conference, I'm sure he is.
Dean Hall?
The game had a budget. It had more of a budget than DayZ appeared to have, so not Ion Television. Mm-hmm. Dean Hall, next game is Ion. Emergent narrative MMO. I didn't know it was a narrative, but it was at the Microsoft press conference.
Here he is on top of a mountain.
Well, there he is on top of a mountain. This is some... Should I look up? I'll bet you Microsoft is backing it.
I mean, if it was at their press conference, it would... Makes sense.
But, I mean, yeah, definitely it seemed to have more of a budget, so...
That's cool.
I mean, yeah.
That could be a, you know...
Neat concept cool. For a game. Nothing that initially, you know, screams cool to me, but if it's complete, it might be worth a look.
So, the one other thing to go along with what you were saying about the PC conference is... they did announce a few games that were coming to PC at the conference.
Three big ones.
Two from Microsoft, which is Killer Instinct and Gears of War, the whatever it's called, the remake.
The remake of the remaster. First one.
Which, you know, isn't a big deal. Like you said, that Gears 1 was on PC, but it's cool for people that...
It's cool for a couple reasons. You get to play together with the Xbox One players.
Which is neat.
You get the new graphics or the there's not that many enhancements because the Gears of War on PC is kind of, that from the past is kind of what they're getting on the console now because it has that extra chapter to the story or whatever. Yeah, it's going to revitalize the multiplayer, so I think that's the biggest deal for some people.
Killer Instinct's cool though.
That's actually big because actually like a you know after the fact kind of like a, oh we could bring that to the PC.
Killer Instinct is fucking amazing by the way. It's honestly one of the best fighting games that I've ever played. Top to bottom, like just the amount of content and what they provide and stuff, and the system itself, it works well.
Well, I love the game. Old Super Nintendo Killer Instinct that I had as a kid,
and I just like the PC needs more good fighters with good net code. Killer Instinct, I believe, has really good net code.
And I think the PC players can play that one together as well. In fact, that seems to be a trend: is more integration between PC and consoles. Which is really what they need to keep consoles, you know, relevant, is pretty much just make them more in line with what a PC can do. So, oh, they can play mods now. Sweet. Oh, you can play with other consoles. Sweet.
The other big one is No Man's Sky.
Yes.
Which we actually didn't really talk about that in our last episode. That game looks...
Oh, yeah.
They actually kind of seem to go into more detail this year than they have previously, because I've always been in this place personally with that game where it's like, yeah, I mean, it sounds really cool and stuff, but I don't really...
What is it?
What exactly, like, are you... What's the moment-to-moment gameplay and, like, the end goal and everything? I understand, like, the kind of the emphasis on just freedom and everything, but I've just kind of... Personally, I've just been curious about how it looks, like how I'll be spending my time playing this game. And
it went into more details.
Yeah, it's still like just a crazy amount of freedom. But It looks really cool, and I think it's cool it's coming to PC, because...
Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine there'll be some crazy mods.
Destructoid said that they were glad, or he said he was glad in an interview that it didn't take him to Planet, like, Fuckhead, or... Because he says he's run into some inappropriately named things.
Oh, of course. Yeah, there's going to be some awful planets out there. But... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel the same as far as, like, there's, like, a lot of freedom, but what are you actually doing?
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of those kind of space sim games, not like this necessarily, where you have a lot of freedom, but that comes with a lack of direction.
Exactly.
And so you start the game, and it's just like, oh, this is really cool. There's a lot of cool game systems here.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck do I do?
Right.
Ever. Like, it's like, yeah, I flew around for a bit, I did a thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't keep the player, like, reeled in, like me personally, I'm just gonna get kind of, I'm gonna lose interest after a while. Like, a lot of people I've heard compare it, like, when that point is brought up, people are like, well, you know, it's like Minecraft, but it doesn't have, like, the creativity and world building of Minecraft. It's just you're exploring.
Yeah.
You know, it's an exploration.
Isn't there some terraforming aspect to No Man's Sky?
I think that they announced, like, or they said in the one of the gameplay videos, you can, like, there is stuff you can do to, like, change the world. Like, everything can be destroyed and stuff. I don't know as far as, like, building, if there's things you can do about with that, but...
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure there's something like that, but... The big thing was,
I know,
like,
sentinels come after you if you destroy enough stuff.
Yeah, it's like, what's the goal of the game? It seems like
to get to the center of the galaxy.
Yeah, whatever.
That's what they say.
Or the universe.
Yeah, center of, is it? Yeah, the universe, because there's, like, multiple galaxies.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
And it's funny because it's like, okay, so are you like a scientist or something? Because, like, you're discovering species and planets, and then you're, like, uploading the data to this fleet. And the fleet's there, but then sometimes there's other factions, and you're not affiliated with them, but you can, like, shoot them. What the fuck is going on? Like, and this guy is clearly, like, antisocial. You were talking about in previous interviews, like, he just is, like, kind of awkward in the interviews, and he was like...
Oh, yeah.
He's just like, they're like, well, what do you do in the game? He's like, well, you do stuff. And it's like, what? What? But, and so he kind of, like, came out on the E3 show floor, like, well, people doubted that you could do stuff in my game, so I'm going to show you what you really do. And so it's still just like, I have more questions. Like,
yeah.
Like
a lost episode.
Yeah, he definitely showed more stuff you can do, like more features, but I still don't quite understand, like, what the goals and objectives and stuff are going to look like in this game. I like you said, I still have a lot of questions about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it definitely looks cool. And that, like,
that's more cool.
I can't help but be impressed when they, like, zoom out. And he's like, and every dot you see is a star and a separate galaxy. And, you know, keep zooming out. And that's, you know, it's cool. But what am I going to be doing at all those places?
Yeah.
So
what's the, like, motivation for wanting to actually go anywhere?
Exactly. To get to the center of the universe.
Oh, great.
Why you need to go out and, like, explore planets to do that? I don't know. I can't just point to the center of the universe and be like, fly!
Yeah, now with that said, if you literally do nothing in that game but explore, you know, there's a certain amount of time that I could spend doing that and having fun. But
there's a dangerous level of hype around.
Yeah, exactly. There is. Or
not necessarily hype, because almost everybody's like, this is crazy, but, like, I don't really know. But it's like there's a dangerous level of mystery where it's like the good kind, where it's like, oop, like, your imagination's going wild with this game. Everybody's is. It's like, well, I mean, if you could do anything, then, I mean, there's a huge universe. Like, whatever, yeah. It's going to be my dream game. Like, you hear that a lot, too. And it's like, well, I mean, it could be, but, like...
A lot of people are projecting what they think the game will
exactly.
be.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, people are filling in the blanks.
Everybody's going to be, like, fucking Spore, and everybody's going to be disappointed.
Yeah. I feel like there's going to be a measure. I still think it's probably going to be really cool.
Yeah.
Like, but I think there's going to be a measure of disappointment, because people have been, like, really... grandiosely filling in those
yes.
blanks.
It's
very much
it's
so.
Like a Molyneux game without Peter Molyneux
hype.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing, is, like, when you show off a game to this scale, which is, like, unlike anything we've ever seen, expectations are obviously going to be high. People aren't expecting to go in and play this game and have it be like an indie game.
Yeah.
You know, that like that kind of appeal. They're expecting it to be like this huge, massive game that you can do anything, and you know, so we'll see. That it's still they still haven't bought me with what they're selling.
I'm just a little jaded.
I'm cautiously optimistic about it.
I mean, yeah, it's not the type of game that I jump into anyway. So, but it's a full $60 game too. I found out. It's
interesting. I didn't know that.
You can pre-order it right now for $60 boxed copy. And it kind of, to me, it looked like, oh, it's a massive game, but it's like an indie game. Like,
right.
It's like a $30 download or $20.
Like, yeah. I kind of felt like it was going to be a little, like, on a different scale than a full-blown release.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We'll see. You guys spoke about this Tripwire. What's the game called again?
Rising Storm 2 Vietnam.
Yeah, Vietnam. They showed that off at the PC conference, and it looks pretty cool. There's, like you said earlier, there's not many NAM games out there.
Yeah, and I like... I don't even really like...
In fact, the last one I can remember that I liked was the Battlefield expansion.
For Bad Company 2.
Bad Company 2, the Vietnam.
It was awesome.
It was really cool.
It was better than Bad Company 2, in my opinion. Multiplayer. I had more fun. I was better at it. Just like the time period, I don't know. The technology, it's just...
That's, yeah.
Something about it, just, and the map design I loved. Like the whole like fields catching fire in that one part. And,
that's true.
Oh, it was fucking awesome.
It was different. I still have... I love Bad Company 2, God. That was my favorite. I think my favorite online shooter ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I have some friends that would agree with that, but...
I once got a sniper kill in that game. That's the only game I've ever been a gifted sniper on. I've always envied those people
who snipe.
Yeah, the stars aligned in that game. I don't know what it was, but I would go on these, like... These just killing sprees where I would be sitting on my point, and I don't remember the name of the maps. I don't remember. It doesn't matter how much I love a game, I'll never remember the name of the maps. But the deserty one where you start off up here.
So that one.
So in conquest mode, you know how it moves from point to point throughout the map. This one, you actually go down like pretty far, like this steep drop off. So if you stay up here, if you stay up at the starting point, you can actually like look down on like the ruins of the city below and like start picking people off. But it leaves you out in the open. So I remember people used to do that a lot. Anyway, I used to just rattle off just a bunch of kills in a row. Like I would just like automatically know to like where the bullet drop was going to be. And I got to the point where it just like second nature, like I'd know how to hide to go above somebody's head. And I just became like what I always wanted to be. It's just the cool sniper guy that everyone hates. Like everyone on the other team's like, that fucking sniper. I was that sniper. Yeah. Never done it again.
Yeah.
And again. So anyway, back to this Vietnam game.
Yeah, these games are very realistic and, like, I almost wanted to call it Heroes of Stalingrad again. A fucking Red Orchestra.
So you've played neither of these?
No, but I have a friend who likes all things simulation. He's told me a lot about Red Orchestra. So, I mean, I know a bit about it, but I've never played them.
So they're either, like, depending on your experience... They are really, really fun games, mm-hmm. or they are really frustrating games.
Fucking horrible or cool.
Because gotcha. It's just not, there's none of the arcadey shooter elements that you get in most other shooting games. Like, because it's more simulation.
It's like Arma, kind of.
I mean,
hate Arma, and I like this.
And this has really good gun feel. Mm-hmm. Like,
maybe because it's World War II. Or, you know, I just like any shooter in that kind of time period. Having, like, an Arma that's, like, World War II, maybe that just appealed to me. I don't know. But, and big open warfare is also cool.
It's just, I don't know. You actually have to, pay attention and be careful.
You have to be incredibly careful.
Right.
It feels, you're nervous the entire time because you're, like, crawling and sneaking and like...
How big are the teams,
Pretty large.
Yeah, they're pretty large.
It's pretty large.
I couldn't give you a number off the top of my head.
I think they hold up to like...
I want to say 64 players.
But it's more... 64. It's, okay, so it's like definitely more large scale. battles.
Yes. And, because it's like, yes, it's that...
Big maps.
Very big, yeah. So this one is their Vietnam spinoff. The last one... So they
Vietnam.
Had, Vietnam. They had Red Orchestra was, you know, Russia versus Germany. Rising Storm was Japan versus the U.S.
Allied forces.
Allied forces.
This guy.
Yeah, this guy, man.
Fact checker Jack here.
I mean, you can't discredit all the other countries that hey, were present.
We were the Pacific. Real winners.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Sorry for our international listeners.
Yeah, sorry, Australia.
Japan. Oh, wait, no. Fuck. What was I going to say? Yeah, oh, yeah.
They were both World War II.
Yeah, so different settings. And so this one is...
I've always liked the Pacific Theater stuff, too, because it doesn't get... like, growing up playing World War II games, which we all played, like, a million of them, they were never, like, for the most part, based in... It was always Normandy and stuff like that.
There were, like, three Medal of Honor games that were set in the Pacific Theater.
Well, I never played them. What, there was Pacific Assault. I remember that
Pacific
one.
Pacific Assault... And there's like another one.
That was past my medal.
There was one that was like a PS2 days. Exclusive.
I remember World at War was, or I think it was World at War
was, yeah.
But that was later than, like, I'm talking about like the heyday of World War II games when they were doing the, like 2004, 2005 maybe, 2003, I don't know. Weren't as many around that time, I guess.
Well, except for that one Medal of Honor.
Pacific Assault, was that around that time?
That was, yeah. That was their second or third main Medal of Honor game, but
was it?
Mm-hmm. But the best one was Allied Assault. But I don't know. Those are all good games. The Heroes of Stalingrad. Is that a game? Is that something? Because like, it is.
Okay. It sounds familiar.
What is it?
I don't know. I'll look it up.
Okay. Fuck. I don't. Anyway, probably some World War II RTS I've never played.
I think it's.
It's probably like a.
Is it?
Heroes of.
Is it a Company of Heroes thing? Or, I don't know.
Maybe it is. Heroes of Stalingrad.
I don't know. Oh, it's the subtitle.
Of Red Orchestra 2.
Oh, really?
So you were just saying the subtitle the whole time.
That's crazy. Okay.
You remember the subtitle, but not the title of the franchise.
Like, all I remember of the game was, like, Stalingrad and things. But I actually really like... I like that, the Stalingrad setting more than the Pacific Theater, just for that type of gameplay. I don't know why. It just... Maybe it's just because I had better experiences with my matches when I played. Because I didn't play that much. But I'm really looking forward to the Vietnam one. For the most part.
Jeffrey was telling me, I didn't see these conversations on the internet, but he was saying people were talking about the trailer for the new Rising Storm, and people were talking and going like, what is this, like, late World War II era? There's like a helicopter going through. Excuse you?
M16s.
They're playing fucking Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yeah. Which has become synonymous with Vietnam now. Yeah. So were you done talking about that?
Yeah, the 30 minutes talking about this one, not that big of a deal.
PC. There's like a special assortment of people that would be really happy that we spent so much time talking about that. One of, my friend included, that's very... heavy on simulation type games.
Shouts out to simulation.
Shout out to Chad. I know you're out there.
Yeah, Chad.
Rest in peace. Just kidding.
Rip in peace.
Yeah, rip in peace.
Holy shit, I just got real depressed.
I wrote Arkham Knight on here just because I wanted to say that it's cool that it seems to be getting positive feedback.
It's got a 91 on Metacritic.
Yeah, so because I'm obviously really excited.
Only people that don't like it is GameSpot. They're like, fuck platforming with the car.
Yeah.
there's actual platforming segments. It's like, you gotta, like, jump the car. Like, you gotta, like, use this, like, boosters to land on a little platform.
I told him, like, I compare it to, like, my thought in my head when he tells me that, is it's like Trials with the Batmobile. And you have to do those parts where you have to, like, bunny hop onto another platform.
Is it,
Trials.
Like, 2D?
No.
I was just wondering if like the camera went like snapped to 2D for these sections.
It's like all of a sudden like Batman the Animated Series.
Didn't they? Oh, what was the Batman? There's like a Batman 2D platforming game recently.
There was Batman for like the Wii. Is that what you're talking about?
I don't know what it came out.
There was Batman the Brave and the Bold or something like that. It was based on that cartoon, and it came out for the Wii. And you could be like a bunch of other superheroes. It was like a beat-em-up, like a side-scrolling beat-em-up. Is that what you're talking about?
Maybe.
There was a side-scrolling beat-em-up in Asta. Because we didn't talk about this, and I didn't talk about this with anybody. But I like Devolver Digital. They are an indie publisher. They publish a lot of good games. A lot of great games. And they had five new titles, I think some of them weren't announced there, but I've pretty much seen all of them for the first time, and one of them, Striker, was like a really fucking gritty Streets of Rage looking thing.
Wait, is that one of the ones that they showed?
Sony.
Yeah.
During the five.
Yeah, I remember that, and it was like really gory and disgusting looking. But in a cool way.
Yeah, but so, all of the games look like games that I would play, because that's just how Devolver is. They just publish good stuff. But nobody really talked about that because, you know, Sony press conference got kind of overshadowed by everything else.
Yeah.
Now we have time to think about it. It's like, oh, yeah, that was cool. Like, five games in one go. Good job,
Devolver. Yeah, I forgot about that one. That one looked pretty cool and gross, but cool. This game that you're talking about, Jack, is on here somewhere. I know it.
I didn't think it was, like, I thought it was more recent than Wii, but...
Why are we talking?
This isn't important. So.
Okay, I gotta find it, but I'll just... Oh, there's this one. 2010? Is that too old?
I don't think it was a Wii title. I don't...
Shoot.
I'm not positive enough to be able to ID this.
Fair enough.
Was it a sick game?
Was it sick?
It was pretty sick.
Okay. I don't know. I'm curious now. You'll have to find out and get
They should make a Batman Metroidvania.
Ooh. Arkham series is kind of like that.
Oh. I mean, like a side-scrolling
one. Yeah, that would be really cool. So I guess now we will get into our top fives after. So this is going to be based around like the showings at E3, our top five games from the E3 week. So why don't you guys start it? Jack, you got yours?
Yeah, let me pull it up real fast.
Got your top five? Remember top fives in middle school? Did that happen with you guys?
Top fives?
Yeah, like girls would make their top five guys that they liked, and you'd hope to be on the list. That didn't happen?
No. Yeah, you, not for me.
In my middle school, you actively got ranked by That's other girls. That's
fucking rough.
It was really rough.
That's real life right there.
Yeah.
It was
a dose of reality at an early age.
Somebody else should go first, actually.
Yeah, hey, you only have four.
I have four written down.
Jack's are so special and surprising that we're going to save the best for last.
I feel like if Phil were here, his list would be like seven. He'd have to like do something different. It would be like four or seven. You want to go first?
Yeah. So my first one is Sea Dogs. Wait.
Sea of Thieves.
Sea of Thieves.
So tell me why.
I can't even remember the name, but it's my most looked forward to game. I was really shocked that Rare came out with a game that actually intrigued me. I thought for sure they'd just bring back an old series and do another adventure game, kind of like the Yooka-Laylee thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what they did best. But just like them saying, hey, no, guys, we're Rare. We do the same thing we did 20 years ago. Like, that wasn't what I wanted to see. But I did want to see what made Rare special, which was, you know, innocent charm and a lot of innovative design and simplicity. All these things are really good at.
Innovation is an important one, too. Not just rehashing what they were known for back in the day, but actually doing new stuff.
The style of this game feels very timeless and classic, like the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, which is timeless and classic, and nobody's never not liked that ride ever.
One guy. There's got to be
one guy.
It was like sick, and he's like, oh, this is... this sucks.
but, like, the game just... It looks like it's really simple, but, like, It's a super simple game you'd play for a long time, and it just looks... I hope it works as well as they portrayed it.
Yeah, and I'm very curious, like, because it was such a, like, broad showing of, like, the gameplay. You know, I'm curious how, like, all the different mechanics and how exactly it's going to work with, like, other players and everything, if there's any sort of single-player component, or if it's all going to be, like, more Journey. Of a light MMO or something. Yeah, or something like
that. I mean, it won't have the same kind of exact experience as Journey, because it's got names.
Like, yeah, and lots of people in it, too.
Because the part of the point of Journey was, like, you didn't know anything about that person. But,
yeah.
But I guess, like, maybe it would be just, like, you just run into people. That would be really cool.
Yeah, and, I mean, I don't know how you'd get a big gang of people on a ship working together, but, I mean, hey, like, oh, there's a ship here, there's people here, let's walk on and just, we know how to use it, so let's just move around.
I mean, the game is so, the trailer is so, like, unclear on what the game is.
Yeah.
But what it did seem to promise was, like, a sense of adventure.
Right.
And, like, in the way that I look for the most in a game, and just, like, everything that I look for in a new promising game was there. And that really, like, that trailer just kind of gave that feeling of making you feel like a kid again.
And the graphics were so appealing, because they just had that.
And the music.
And the music was amazing. They had, like, that rare charm, and it looked really good, too. Like, graphically, on a technical level, I thought it looked pretty damn good. The water, we talked about that last week. The water was
awesome.
So sexy.
Sea Dogs, look forward to it. Pre-order, look it up on Amazon. Sea Dogs.
Don't.
D-A-W-G-Z.
Okay.
Buy it now. You were going to say something, Jack.
Was there?
Well, it was like a while ago. Never mind. I guess I'll just go with my number two.
Oh, I was gonna. Like when you guys were talking about, you were saying you're glad that they didn't just go with what they had done before. It's like last week we talked about, or earlier this week we talked about how a lot of people were thinking it might be a new Conquer game, and
I was like,
that would have been cool as well. I was relieved that that's not what it was.
Yeah, I agree. Like, as much as I would have been, like, super stoked and happy, like I would have been very happy about them bringing back a game like that if they were to do a good job. But I wouldn't be half as happy as something like this that I just didn't expect at all.
I didn't expect it. I mean, like I told you guys last week, I would have been happy with a Battletoads Xbox Live Arcade remake. So I can't.
Yeah,
but this is, like, so out there and surprising that...
Yeah, it seems like, you know, progress. Rare is making actual industry progress rather than just hearkening to the past, which is what a lot of good devs from the past are doing, is just saying, oh, remember a past in HD? But, like...
How much of the original core team did they even have there?
Not that many. No, that's the thing.
Because that's who's working on Yooka-Laylee right now at their new studio that they formed.
So, like... you know, there's a bunch of old guys there, but, like, they were a big studio, and the guys that are there now aren't, like, as big as the guys who left. So, but the guys who left even said before E3, oh, boy, you guys are going to be stoked at what Rare has. It's like, so we got the seal of approval from the other guys at Rare.
And even the actual core Rare team that we know and love went through a lot of changes throughout the different games that we grew up playing, too.
And the fact that... Oh, sorry.
No, that was pretty much it.
The fact that Microsoft is first-party publishing a game like this is also just... Not only does it say that this game is going to hopefully succeed, because it's one of the big first-party IPs, but, you know, it means that it'll get proper funding, and Microsoft
is... on board with it.
Microsoft is making a push that they haven't made in years. I mean, usually their first-party stuff is, oh, get a new Halo and Gears out there, and that's our, you know, our beaming future. It's like...
Even Phil Spencer was, like, touting...
Spill Fencer.
He's Phil Fencer. Even Phil Spencer was, like, really hyping this game for the last, you know, little while. He tweeted... I don't remember how long ago it was that he went and looked at Rare's latest game, and it's going to be awesome. And so they seem to be very on board with this. And
if my name was Phil Spencer, I would have my username be Spill Fencer.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I might do that anyway.
You should.
My second most...
Brawny Jambora. Sorry.
Doesn't...
Brano Jamboree.
I could be Bron Jam.
There you go.
Yeah, that's not that bad. Ghost Recon Wildlands is my number two. Mostly because, I mean, I was just sticking with games that I wasn't already excited about this E3 or knew about or were new announcements. Because some of these games, you know, we had a previous E3 on. But these are the ones that got on my radar. So yeah, Wildlands. I was shocked. I'm really excited. I love Ubisoft's Tom Clancy games. So seeing a game of this scale and like just another kind of Division thing, I fucking love Ghost Recon and the idea of like a Just Cause slightly more silly open world with lots of vehicles.
And, but with four-player cooperative missions.
Yeah, four-player instead of an MMO kind of thing. And so four-player open world co-op is an awesome idea.
Mm-hmm.
And just environment diversity and the setting looked awesome. I love South America. So anyways, that's my number two, mostly because of how surprising it was. Like, I was shocked. I didn't think that Ubisoft would have a new Tom Clancy game when there's already a massive, big hype Tom Clancy game that's not out yet. So to me, that was like a kind of a bold move. Yeah. Releasing two huge, innovative Tom Clancy games at once, but that's cool. I love them all, so I'll take three kick-ass-looking Tom Clancy games. There hasn't been a good one in a while, or really any in the series that I like, so.
Oh, yeah, and I always forget about Siege, too, being a Tom Clancy game. I always forget about that.
Yeah, which comes out really soon and has terrorists on it. But my number three is Firewatch. Firewatch, just the story really intrigued me. I really like that kind of immersive storytelling experience type game when it's done well. This game looks like it's done really well.
This may sound weird, but I like the main character's voice because he sounds a bit tubby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like it's implied that like it's shown part of his body. Like,
yeah, he's like tubby hands and wrists.
And he's like got, it showed like his legs. He's got this Batman calves.
Yeah, I like that. He just plays a normal tubby guy.
He just sounds really normal too. Yeah,
it sounds like a guy that I think I've heard him talk somewhere.
It seems like they wrote a really lighthearted, fitting yet super realistic like mystery novel. And they adapted it into a really stylish
first-person experience. It's going to get dark.
I liked it. What was the text message you got last time?
What was it? Firewatch. It's like someone like, it's going to get fucked up or something.
It's
going
to get like uncomfortable or something.
I wish I could find that. Keep talking and I'll...
So I mean, it's pretty simple. That's just one of those games where it's not like, oh, well, game changer, it's super innovative. Maybe it is, I don't know, we'll wait for the reviews. But, like, that's one of those types of games that no matter what, like, that's going to be, like, instant it comes out, I'm going to get it, I'm going to beat it. Probably, like, 5 hours long, if that.
It just seems just kind of weird, and just looks like a fun experience.
Yeah, it looks like something I'd find memorable. And
something you can sink into.
Yeah. And just the sense of, like, mystery around, like, I have no idea where it's going
to
go.
Yeah, I'm just really intrigued. It's like a really cool movie trailer was shown to me, and I'm like, yeah, I want to watch that. Like, but, yeah, it's a game.
Yeah.
Number four is Cuphead.
Cuphead. I thought you were sticking to stuff that we didn't know about.
I didn't know. I'd never heard of Cuphead.
We called you out.
I'm talking about games that appeared on my radar.
You didn't see Cuphead last year?
Nope. I never saw.
Did they even like say anything about Cuphead at E3?
This year?
Yeah, I thought that the stuff that I think
they just showed the trailer and that was it.
But it was stuff that we'd already seen. Like,
well, you'd already seen. I had never heard of it. I never even heard the name of the game.
Oh.
They played the trailer during the Microsoft press conference and I was like, whoa, holy shit. So, games that appeared on my radar this E3 was Cuphead.
Cuphead,
which is coming out next year. Now, pretty simple. I mean, I hope I like the gameplay, but it seems like the kind of 2D game that I do like.
I looking at the like videos of it, there's no way that I'm not gonna like.
Yeah, it's just fucking sweet bosses is what they've shown, which is awesome. Yeah. So,
it has like controls where up goes down and down goes up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
But that's the only way I won't like it.
Like if they just do something stupid.
Unless they require you to play with a DDR pad or a Guitar Hero controller.
That's like the only conceivable way that I can think of that I wouldn't like it.
You just go up and down with the guitar.
Sorry to interrupt you.
But, yeah, so my fifth one is Mirror's Edge 2. This was a tough decision, really, for the whole top five, because Fallout 4 and Star Wars Battlefront and, in a way, even Doom were kind of givens. And there's probably even more than that I just am not thinking of at the moment. And this is, you know, the big Sony announcements. Like, Last Guardian, though, like, that's always been on my radar.
Well, there's Horizon. Now it's back on. I forgot about Horizon.
Horizon's on my radar, but it's not... I'm not as excited about it as some people are. Yeah. I'm still skeptical because I don't... There hasn't been a game that studios put out that I liked. But it looks really good. I like the concept. So, but Mirror's Edge 2, I'm immensely excited for the open world. They announced that at E3. I mean, I that was a make or break thing for me. And so as soon as they announced that and showed the city at night, I was like, done.
I heard that they completely took out gun combat. That there's no gun combat.
Really?
They just completely just...
Because there was rumors that it was like a bigger deal, and I was thought that was dumb. If they just made it to where it was just straight emphasis on better martial art, smoother, like mixing the martial arts with the platforming better... That would be great.
Now, keep in mind, I didn't actually read the article. I just saw like a headline as I was like scrolling through stuff. So, but it the headline said that they just removed it altogether, which was
great. Yeah,
that's just great
because like you shouldn't be able to use them. I mean, logically, you should be able to pick it up and shoot like a guy, but like it they control like crap because she sucks it with them. Like, but
I apologize that it's starting to get hot in here. By the way. Temperature-wise. I don't know if that's affecting you guys as much, but...
I'm not feeling it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm feeling good. That's pretty cool.
Was that your list? Was that all five?
It's five, yeah. That's five games.
You ready yet?
Yeah, I'm ready. I should probably go since mine's, like, not very unique.
Neither. Mine's going to be the worst of the three because I'm last and it's just filled with stuff that... But whatever. Who cares?
So, like... I didn't stick to stuff that was new at E3, and while there were other games that I thought were like interesting, the stuff that I have written down is more stuff that I know that I'm pretty excited to play, like because it's more like I don't know, like I don't feel like there's any way that it'll miss.
I got you.
Like so, my first one is Fallout, of course, just because while we don't know everything about the new Fallout game. We know it's going to be pretty similar to like what we've already played in the Fallout series, but it's going to have all these new nice things. Mm-hmm. So I just, always had great experiences with those games, and what they showed at E3 was great.
Yeah, and like, let's face it, before E3 we knew nothing about it other than the trailer that came out. So like to actually see the systems at work and stuff like that.
It sold me on it.
Sold me on it, definitely.
Well, I mean, and if you look back two episodes, you will find that that would have been very hard to do.
Complaint gate is what they're calling it. Yeah. People are nuts.
Fallout.
Yeah, Fallout. I mean, there's not a lot to say other than, I mean, it's. I don't really foresee that being anything less than a fantastic game.
No.
Yep.
I love me some Bethesda.
I'm very happy to be proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I guess I was kind of clear that I was wanting to be as well, but better than I don't know, just seeing it in action just made me a believer.
Yes.
That's just a good formula for them.
So my second game is Battlefront. Once again, just... I guess there's more of a risk here and a chance of... like we've seen... like a good amount of stuff now, but like it's still like it could miss. Like the feel might be off, even though it looks nice in motion.
Right.
But I think that I'll enjoy it.
One thing that they fucking nailed was the aesthetic, though.
Oh yeah. Did you guys see? I don't think this. I hadn't watched this prior to the last episode, but the co-op gameplay. Did you guys see that?
The one that was like the
yeah,
it was on Tatooine.
It was almost like kind of like a survival.
It was their
thing.
Survival mode. With the two rebels.
Yeah, I did
and
see
Admiral
that.
Admiral Akbar's like, "Get to the Did you watch it? It was Admiral Akbar appeared. It was really cool because he looked almost like he was like live action.
Yeah,
like,
I couldn't. Yeah. So after our last episode, I watched that, and that that was just another thing that, kind of confirmed what I thought from watching the original gameplay that they showed during the conference. Like, it was just more awesome stuff that looked and felt and sounded like Star Wars.
Yeah, it just looked really fun. I'm excited.
It has such pretty explosions too.
It's good for it. Is. Yeah.
Yeah. All the sparks and I heard the Wilhelm scream.
You did?
Yeah. After you said it, I went back and like watched some of the videos, and I finally heard
Sometimes it. Sometimes you just have to know it's there to hear it. Like,
exactly.
One game that there's people always point out the Wilhelm scream, but there are a lot of other screams that appear in other media that like older media.
Sorry about that.
I've seen old movies that have other
a little bit of footsie.
Yeah.
Accidental footsies. I've seen other. It was my fucking knee.
All right. Hey.
It was kneesy.
Okay. In some cultures, knees are very intimate.
Oh, yeah. His knees are kinky. But
I don't know that to be true, but I bet it's true.
The fuck was I saying?
You were talking about...
Screams. I was talking about screams.
Yeah.
In Command & Conquer, there were just tons of unit deaths that were just, like, iconic old movie canned screams. Mm-hmm. Wilhelm was one of them. But then there's like the. I was almost going to reenact it. That would be a terrible idea.
Yeah. But, have you ever tried to reenact the Wilhelm scream? Because it's nearly impossible. I think that could be that way with any scream.
That's true. Scream sound. Because I've been thinking like about what Johnny is talking about, like where there's certain scream sound effects that I don't have a name for that I repeatedly hear in media.
Scream number 6.
But I could never like. Hey, do you know this one?
Yeah. Hey, have you heard this scream?
Yeah!
I can honestly think of at least 10 and, like, play the sound in my head.
Yeah.
Like, there's the one of the burning guy who's just, like, an elongated, like, and, like, you hear sometimes...
Kudos to you for actually trying.
He went for it.
Yeah. You hear it in, like, multiple, like, YouTube videos and stuff. Some people try to be comedic and they use it. But, like, I've actually heard it, like, in the old Army Men games when people are on fire. Like, it's, like, usually lower budget stuff. They use just all of the Command & Conquer used them, I assume, all over The Witcher 3. All of them. And it's just great. I haven't noticed them more in a game since, like, The Witcher 3.
We need to start editing those into the podcast
yeah.
as much as possible.
I'm sorry.
Jeez.
That was rough.
That was rough.
I thought that was like an intentional like dorky laugh, so I just kind of went on with it.
I don't think it was. I don't remember.
Just straight mocking.
Yeah. And the look on your face, you're just like, ugh.
Okay, so what's
moving on? We're ruining your list. I'm sorry.
Number 3, Sea of Thieves. We already talked about this. We don't know a lot about this one. I can't be sure about anything about it other than I think it's going to be fun.
Don't even know what type of game it is yet, really.
No, but I don't feel too worried about it.
Yeah, same here.
Somehow. Johnny also had Firewatch. It's going to get uncomfortable. it's going to get a little bit weird, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little kinky.
It could be okay. I think it could easily go either way and be great as far as it being very actually just realistic,
mm-hmm.
or getting a little supernatural. I think I could super enjoy whatever direction they go.
Yes,
either could be great.
I feel like it's gonna go like no matter what direction it's gonna go, it's going to be surprising because I just like we said, I have no idea what to even like where it's gonna go.
Yeah, like even if a trailer comes out that we feel like it gives us a little bit more direction on where it's
like
going,
like a werewolf, like we're gonna be wrong. Tower.
You're gonna be like, I feel like that game's just gonna be really misleading.
Yes,
there's gonna be some there's gonna be twists and turns.
Yes.
Yeah, Firewatch. My last one is Deus Ex. That's definitely in the category of I just know I'm gonna enjoy it.
Yep.
There's nothing particular about the trailers that I'm just like, oh, that looks like a new feature. I think I'm going to enjoy it. Nothing particular has been interesting other than that I know it's... I loved Human Revolution so much. I was so into that game that I'm ready for more.
I feel like with that game that it's kind of almost in a place where... It's the sort of game that will suck you in... to its world and everything, and it's and like a Human Revolution did, but maybe like showing it off. It's not like the kind of game that you're like, oh, that looks so fucking cool, but you know that it, you're gonna love it when you play it. Mm-hmm. It's one of those games that's it. Maybe it doesn't like presents super well or get you excited by watching it, but like yeah. you said, you just know you're gonna enjoy it.
Yeah, I think like those games are. Human Revolution was more fun played than, like, seeing it.
Yes.
Like, I didn't give a crap about Human Revolution. I don't know how I decided. You tell me to play Human Revolution at one point?
Yeah. And I'd beaten it, or gotten close.
Gotten close.
it's my thing. I get 10 minutes before the end of a game, and I just I drop it, and I tell people I beat it.
You...
And people call me on my bullshit because they find out.
You told me to play it, and that's not generally my kind of game. And I didn't really have expectations going into playing it, and I just fell in love with that game. Like, I was so into it. The game feel for it was just great. So
I installed it yesterday.
Good. Get to it?
I'll get to it.
It's got more of a... I went back into it, and it's got more of a... the aesthetic is awesome, but the graphics are more dated than... I remember, because the aesthetics work so well that in my memory it looks a lot better than it actually does.
I remember when it came out, it wasn't, like, graphically all that impressive.
Yeah, well, considering the, it was graphically alright, but, like, yeah. considering the style they were going for and the gorgeous CG mm-hmm. cutscenes that they had, is just kind of, like, perfect aesthetic and, like, you know, somewhat dated for the time engine. So now they got a new engine, and, like, looking at it, seeing it being, like, more... It now looks like kind of what I remember the old one yeah. looking like. So I saw, like, this just looks, like, more of the same, and then I remembered, like, playing it, like, a couple months ago, like, booting it up again, and being like, oh, wait, no. The game does definitely... it has improved.
And just also hearing about, like, what they're focusing on, like, from the developers and stuff. What they want to get out of it and what they're putting their emphasis on. Just hearing that stuff is exciting too. I like the direction they're going with some of the gameplay choices and stuff.
So I'm gonna try to beat it in time for the.
This will be my third time starting the game. I just realized.
It's just one of those games. It's like your Witcher 2.
Yeah, it is.
Everybody started it like 100 times. Some people I know are just not into it though, like Matt Beachley and. Handful of other people just did not like it at all. Actually, I think I know more people. I don't really know many people that are middle of the road about it, but I know more people that just straight up just didn't enjoy it or loved it. And it's like a 50-50 thing almost with that game.
Was that all five
for you? That was, oh, okay. That was the end of my list.
Well, my list is going to be very similar because I think I pretty much take things from both your guys' list. I had Cuphead on mine. Like I said last week, I love platformers. I like 2D platformers. I love games that do interesting things with the art style. I just love the look of the game. It looks super fun and just great to look at. I liked Tropical Freeze last year. I talk about that game a lot. Donkey Kong
sounds refreshing, right?
Yeah, now. Just refreshing games. They're just
speaking of, let's go get a Tropical Freeze.
Yeah,
let's go to Dairy Queen. Star Wars, I had on here. I had pretty high expectations for it, but I was trying to be optimistic. I was trying to be optimistic, but I was, you know. Part of me was a little worried it wouldn't live up to my expectations, but seeing it actually played, it really honestly blew away my expectations. I expected it to be good and DICE to do a good job, but just the way everything comes together and how well polished it seems, and just it looked amazing. The sound was incredible. Like the music and the weapons and just everything about it just was what I would want from a Star Wars game. So
it's very cohesive.
Yeah, right? Exactly. That's a perfect way to describe it. Very cohesive.
And again, I've never looked at a preview for a game and been like, "Damn, that's good audio." Mm-hmm. Like other than like, you know, like Zelda or something that's just got cool iconic. But like as far as like realistic sounds and just feeling very Star Warsy, but like. Like, they really tried with that. Like, really tried really hard. There were sometimes you'll see an E3 preview for, like last year, or I think it was last year, Mirror's Edge had, like, a behind-the-scenes first look kind of thing. They're like, it was like a 2-minute trailer for Mirror's Edge 2. It was really fucking lame. Like, it was just, like, her in a bland, white tutorial zone. And then they had, they were like, yes, in the game we're focusing on combat. And I'm like, And then she, like, hits somebody. And then it shows some guy, you know, some snobby-looking guy is like, we're designing perfect audio for this game. It's going to sound beautiful. And it's just, like, going on about the audio. Like, our first impression of this game is some guy talking about how the sound effects are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show it, and it shows her, like, punching a dude. And, it's like, and I'm like, oh, okay, that sounded pretty cool, but I don't fucking care. I want to see, like, the game first.
Right.
But with this, it's like, you know, I thought that showing an audio preview thing was, you know, whenever people talk about that, it just proudly, but like with this, it was like, oh my god, they should be proud of that. That was fucking awesome.
And when you think back to, like, all the stuff they showed, like, them, those behind-the-scenes things of them going into, like, the vault and looking at all the props and doing the sound and taking sound from the, like, actual audio clips and things, and when you actually see it live, you're like, oh yeah, they were not just saying that stuff. You can tell that they actually put that amount of care and effort into it, and it shows. So, yeah, it definitely won me over, I would say. I'm still, you know, I'm still being cautiously optimistic because I want to see how the rest of the game plays out as far as, like, content and everything. But I know that no matter what, I'm going to enjoy playing it.
Yeah.
Fallout is on my list as well. We pretty much already said everything there is to say about Fallout. It's just, it looked amazing. It's everything I loved about playing Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas, and then adding a bunch of stuff that I know that I'm going to love on top of that, like weapon modifications and, you know, like these light town building and all these different systems. It sounds very appealing to me. So
for me, it just sounds like they're being a little modest with the game, sort of, and because that's kind of how Bethesda goes about their business. They're kind of like Valve in that regard, where they just don't really say much, and then they just kind of release it, and everyone's like, oh, whoa. But they keep talking about how, you know, they've been working on it since Fallout 3 came out, and like, this is their biggest game yet. It's their biggest world yet. They keep saying that. Lots of devs say it, but, like, I can't remember when he kind of equated the size, but, like, they made it sound like it was fucking massive. Like,
yeah.
Like, way bigger than Fallout's ever been. It seems like they just kind of put all their chips in this game and just tried to make as much as they could for a really long time. Which, if that's the case, if they just designed just this massive, biggest, you know, tons of stuff in it, I always felt that Fallout worlds were more detailed than Elder Scrolls worlds because just how the setting goes. And if that's the case, like, that's always why, you know, Oblivion's world was bigger than Fallout 3's, but Fallout 3's had more, like, it was more dense.
Yeah.
If that's the case, if this Fallout 4 really is, like, you know, so many times larger than Skyrim. Most people compare games to Skyrim in terms of size, which is fucking stupid. But to compare a Bethesda game to Skyrim in terms of size, that's fair. Because it's, like, the same.
I heard, I was watching, like, a gameplay walkthrough. Somebody was, while they were playing Mad Max, and there was a girl interviewing the guy, and she's like, so how big is this game compared to, like, Skyrim?
Yeah, I think I saw that.
Yeah, and I was like,
how big is even Skyrim in comparison to
Skyrim?
Do you like other Elder Scrolls games? Do you know?
I've seen maps. Like,
it's what?
Anytime an open world game comes out, I feel like I always see a map that somebody makes. But I don't know. To me, that's kind of just, it's arbitrary at some point, because every game is constructed differently.
Yeah. Like,
especially a game with cars. Like, how are you going to compare the two?
Yeah, why the fuck would anybody compare Just Cause 2 to Skyrim? Oh, Just Cause 2's got 13 Skyrims in it. It's like, yeah, it don't matter.
You can also get from point A to point B in 7 seconds using a jet. So, yeah. It doesn't really work. Number 4 on my list. I'm actually going to change my number 5 to the original one, because you guys already talked about Sea of Thieves. But my number 4 is Uncharted. It was obviously I was excited about it beforehand, but I will say that the gameplay demo that they showed off for one was impressive. It you know, the Uncharted games are always technically impressive. It was very pretty, but it also showed the charm and the kind of banter between between Nathan Drake and Sully, which the other games were known for, and I feel like it just. I think that some people, and me included, were a little worried with the staffing changes that happened at Naughty Dog before development or during development of this game, that it may, you know, affect the quality or the writing style of the game. But just from seeing this gameplay walkthrough, it seems like that isn't so much the case. I hope that the whole game is...
Well, in that regard, it didn't really... That part didn't really convince me yet. I mean, it was probably fine.
No, I mean, that's just a short...
They still learned what they learned from Uncharted 3.
Right.
My biggest thing is, like, I loved how Uncharted 3 actually felt like it was substantial to the story of the whole piece.
Yeah.
Of the series. And I hoped that 4 would continue that, because it sounds like it will, if it really is the last game. Which I also kind of do hope is the last game, just so...
They said this is the end of the Nathan Drake story. They're finalizing it.
I'm so happy about that. I don't want it to go on for... I don't want it to be the next, you know, Halo.
So the next Uncharted game will be what's her name? His wife or girlfriend.
Yeah.
Their kid.
Yeah.
What's her name? Shit.
Starts with an E. Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston, right. That's her name. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. Anyway, my fifth game. I'm going to stick with my original one. I changed it to Sea of Thieves, but I'm going to stick with Street Fighter V because whatever. I want it.
Yeah. Fuck Sea of Thieves.
Fuck Sea of Thieves. It looks like shit.
Street Fighter.
This isn't a fighting game.
Yeah.
Yeah, this isn't a fighting game. I saw no fisticuffs in that trailer.
No.
Street Fighter V, I'm super stoked for it.
Maybe a little punch. I don't know. They're swords.
Yeah, that's true. I'm excited for Street Fighter V. I was excited to see the two returning characters, especially Birdie, because he's from the Alpha games, and it's neat to see a new character that wasn't in Street Fighter IV. And I also just love the attention that Capcom seems to be giving it, and the amount of marketing and stuff. It's like going to be playable at like Six Flags locations and like all this weird stuff. Yeah, just like this crazy. So I'm glad that they're doing a beta, which I like, and all the gameplay they've showed so far in the systems, which they finally showed a little bit more detail into how some of the mechanics are going to work, and they all sound really promising. Especially the changes that are being made from 4 to 5, I really like, and I'm super stoked for it. And it looks amazing. It's such a pretty looking game.
Bethesda's gonna follow up with having like the Doom demo playable at fucking Disneyland. Get off the Winnie the Pooh ride. Check this out.
Was that a heart getting ripped out?
Yeah. I wish the demons made that noise.
I hope it has a Wilhelm scream. I want every game at this point to have a Wilhelm scream. I want to play NBA 2K16 and like make a shot and just hear a Wilhelm scream from the crowd somewhere. So that's my five. So with that said, I think we can move on to the biggest surprises of E3. Like, we're just going to pick one thing that surprised us the most at E3. I guess I'll start, if that's okay with you guys.
No, yeah, I can't imagine what you're going to pick.
Mine was... I was going to try and pick something weird, but I can't think of anything at times. Mine was Shenmue. That Shenmue 3 being shown on the Sony floor. I wish I would have known then, when I very first saw the announcement, that Sony was going to be backing them. Because when I first saw it, I was like blown away and super excited. But then I was like, this is just a Kickstarter campaign. Like, what's this mean? But then they came out and said Sony's backing them. So that made me even more excited. And I just, like I said on our last episode, I can't believe it's happening. I'm still like just blown away by it and don't really have any words I can put to how I feel about it. It's just... it's exciting. I really honestly never thought it would happen. And so the fact that it's really is happening, you know, it's still a ways off, but yeah, I'm beyond excited for it. And that was a huge shocker to me.
I'm jealous of the people in your position that are getting this experience, but I never played those games, so I don't.
They were fucking weird. They were just...
There are so many people that are like, Shenmue? And then they looked it up, and they're like, what?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, I feel like it's one of those games where it would be very difficult to go back and play now.
I'm going to try it.
Maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but...
I think you're right, and I just have this weird patience for shit like
that. Yeah, I mean, you can get through, and it's not the kind of game that you'll play it and be like, how do people like this? Like, you can play it and understand why, you know, at the time people would enjoy it, but it would just be a different... It probably hasn't aged well.
It's going to be a commitment, too. It's going to be like...
Very much so.
It's like 30 hours per game.
And there's so many menial tasks that... arm wrestling and moving things with a... forklift and just playing Lucky Hit. There's this game called Lucky Hit, and you have to get a job, and you get a job at these like little Lucky Hit game boards that are set around town, and people place bets. And so the game is we've all seen the game. It's just not called Lucky Hit, but you drop a like marble, they go like to
pachinko.
Pachinko, exactly,
or plinko or whatever from
Japan likes pachinko.
Yeah, so it's this game. It's called Lucky Hit, and you have to stand in front of the booth and ask people to play it. And there's only like three different dialogue things that he'll say. So you have to sit there like as people are walking by. Would you like to play a game of Lucky Hit? How about some Lucky Hit? How about some Lucky Hit? And just over and over again. And there's just so many like little things like that that, you know, when I played it when I was younger, I was so blown away by the open world aspect that, you know, these things that you let them slide and stuff. And then there's these really awesome fighting sequences because it has the Virtua Fighter engine.
Yeah.
The fighting in that game.
That's awesome.
The second game had a lot more fighting. I remember the first time I played number one, I went through like the whole, like, I played it for a ton and never got in a fight. And it's so funny because it has like this incredibly deep combat system and it just doesn't get like showcased all that much at the beginning of the game. Later on it does it a lot. But I'm just excited for them, for that game to come out.
There is one thing that does concern me, and that, so the funding for the game...
Sorry.
So the funding for the game is great, and Sony even announced that they're backing it, and Sega has got their name on it somehow, so who knows what's going to happen with that, but Sony's backing it, so why the fuck are the stretch goals, like, major chunks of the game, and they're really far out, too? Like, I don't think... I'm worried we won't hit, like, one of them, because they announced, like, oh, there's four regions of the game, and... Like, every $100,000 is, like, a piece of that region once you hit the certain point. So it's going to be, like, $4 million, and then every $100,000 is, like, a chunk of that region. And it's like, that's not good.
Yeah,
like,
that's...
Stretch goals should be, like, modes and silly things that didn't need to be there to make a complete game. But that's, like, we're going to... If you don't fund the whole game, you won't get the whole game, even though Sony's behind it. Like, I don't really get that.
Yeah, it is weird now that Sony has announced that they're backing it. The idea of the stretch goals, that is, like I said last week, I think that Sony's just going to drop like $20 million into the Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah.
That's what they mean by backing it.
They're just going to give like a big chunk of it to Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But gauging popularity or demand makes tons of sense with this game.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's going to be one of those games where the Kickstarter kind of slows down. It's not going to be like, people are going to learn about it and be like, oh, this Shenmue game looks interesting. No, it's going to be all these people who've waited an eternity and be like, what the fuck? And then they like throw $1,000 at it. The four $10,000 options have been filled. There were four of them.
What was the bonus tier for that?
One was... you get a jacket that Yu Suzuki wore when he was like showcasing the first two games at like the press events, which is like the main character's jacket in the game.
Ryo.
Ryo. And the other three were you get to go to Japan and have dinner with Yu Suzuki and some other stuff.
But those ones are always funny to me because that. What if that goes really horribly? Like, what if the person gets food poisoning while you're there?
Yeah. What if Yu Suzuki gets food poisoning? Yeah.
Like, and he just has to go home.
Yeah, he owes you $3,000.
There's so much of that that's like unofficial. You know, like having dinner with somebody. That's always been a funny prize to me.
Yeah.
Just go watch them eat. sorry, I can't talk. I'm eating. So
the ones that I always find cool are like, if it's, I think, R.A. Salvatore, he's an author. I don't know if you
Yeah, I know who he is.
He, you know, recently, he made like a board game slash like RPG thing. I think it was called Demon Wars, like mm-hmm. the Reformation. And he had that kickstarted. And his thing, I think, was that like for the higher tiers, it was like, come play like a Dungeons & Dragons session with me and my
son. That's awesome.
Like, that's like, there's clearly something that if you're supporting the Kickstarter, you'd be interested in doing that. And you're obviously interested in like hanging out with Salvatore. And you're not just eating a meal. Like, I'm sure you eat a meal, like,
with a guy you can't even speak the same language as fucking Yu Suzuki. Like, he's just gonna be like, and there's three people there, so you're gonna be battling for his attention, and he's just, the conversation's gonna be slower than molasses.
That's awkward. Like, if you pay, awkward. Like, a huge sum to get, like, this thing, and you have, like, three other people that are also, like, there at the same time, like...
Do they still have to, like, sit around and, like, try and figure out what to eat? I don't really feel like that.
Like, you get to the restaurant, it's like, I'm actually not really feeling this
right now. Yeah, one of the guys, I'm not really hungry, I'll eat it. And the other guy's like, I'll eat anything.
They have macaroni.
That could be fun, I guess. With you,
just want to go get some pepper lunch.
Just your $8 meal that you paid $10,000 for.
So, Johnny.
Hmm.
What surprised?
Oh, sure. What did surprise me? I could say a couple things that are brief. So I'll leave the. I know Jack picked, so I'm gonna leave his. Nintendo not having a game, a real game. Nothing that's like all spin-off-y, kind of like, I mean, I don't consider like a big name Mario title to be a spin-off. They should have announced something. Reggie said that they only want to keep at E3 what is in their like half year release window.
Right.
Which is fair. But they didn't do that with Zelda. They announced that last year and they didn't bring it back. So it's like either A, bring back Zelda for a little reveal. Or B, fucking show a new game. Like, announce a new Mario game that's going to come a year or two from now. I don't care. Just do something. Make it interesting. Make it buzzworthy. Make people talk about your press conference. Especially since it was a kick-ass press conference in terms of, like, the humor. That was great. They had the Jim Henson Company come out and do the puppets, and Jim Henson's son directed it himself. Like... The press conference was great. They just didn't have anything.
Is Jim Henson's son just like in charge of everything that runs there?
Yeah,
because like, he was the producer on Farscape.
If you think about it, Jim Henson's son might have done more than Jim Henson.
Probably at this point. I think so.
Yeah, not in terms of like, but even in innovation, like he wasn't his dad.
Farscape's puppetry is pretty. Pretty innovative.
Well, Farscape and the Dark Crystal and stuff, like, him taking, instead of just keeping up with the Muppets, he just, like, went fucking weird. I don't think Dark Crystal was Jim Henson, because he was dead by the way. No. I don't know. Rest in peace, Jim Henson.
Rip in peace.
You the man?
Rip in peace.
So, my biggest surprise was Jim Henson's son. And then the other one was that Doom was good. And Fallout. I thought that I could be convinced with Fallout. Doom, I was like, I don't think I'm going to be like surprised by this. It's going to be a really basic shooter. And I wasn't that surprised. Well, I was somehow surprised by it, but it was a really basic shooter. And it was something that you could have totally imagined. And a lot of people are saying they're disappointed because it's nothing special. And I'm thinking, like, Yeah, that kind of. But I don't care. Like, it looks fucking awesome. Yeah, like I want
to. It has the appeal to me that Wolfenstein had. Now, Wolfenstein, I didn't give a shit about till I actually played it either.
Yeah,
like, I didn't see that game and I like get excited about it. It wasn't until I played it that I was like, oh, this is really fun.
But Wolfenstein was really good because the story drew me in, that's and true. Then the gameplay was also like, oh,
this is Doom game has a great story. You're a dude who blows shit in half, and, you know?
Yeah. If the game really does get progressively more metal and crazy, which, it, you know, Doom games do that, like, if they just showed halfway through hell, or halfway through the game at that one point in hell, and it just gets, like, balls out, just nuts after that, I just...
Or it just has a heartwarming story about a boy and his dog or something. Like, that's the subplot of the game. You're trying to find your dog in hell.
Turns into a summer family.
I'd be into that. I don't know.
Yeah, I was really surprised by just like how hyped I was just like watching that.
Yeah,
it was did a great job presenting it as well.
Yeah, it was very metal.
Yeah,
and it was a perfect game to start off the conference.
Yeah,
you know, it was just like the yeah,
it was the perfect E3 kickoff. Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, so that was my surprises. Subject.
Yeah, I didn't have a. Like an emotional surprise. Like I didn't have a Shenmue situation. It was like,
I got emotional.
Been waiting for this.
It was weird.
Just because I cried like a baby, and peed my pants,
just lost control of your bodily functions.
Yeah.
Mine was the new Nier game because how in the hell did that happen? Because
yeah, especially for people who know the story behind Nier. For those who played Nier, they're like. This is a masterpiece. Why the fuck would anyone?
There's plenty of people who tried Nier and were really turned off by it. Though. Yeah. Like it's a very it's a very split game. Like there are people that loved it, and there are people that had just like, why would you ever play that game? Mm-hmm. And somehow we got a second one, and as soon as they started playing footage, like I just knew that it was something.
Yeah.
From that creator, I was just like, no. And then we came out with the mask, with the Nier mask on.
I didn't know anything about this guy, and that creeped me out.
He's a psycho. It's hilarious.
Have you seen like his interview with the sock puppet?
No.
He conducted an interview. Like he was just like, "You're the sock puppet," and the rest of him is off screen.
Yeah.
That's.
It's so funny because like nobody like questions it when they're interviewing. Like or like they don't like try to explain at E3 when he comes out, like they're just like, and here's the creator, and he just comes out and he's like that, and anybody who doesn't know, they're just like, what the fuck? And then that's it.
That would have been like so distracting to me if I just didn't know. Like especially at the end when they're like inviting all of the different studios developers to come back out on stage and he just comes back out again. Those Super Smash Bros. Clap. Yeah.
We all picked... I like that we... All our surprises were for very different reasons.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's it.
Well, I mean, this is... This might not be that interesting, but I could say, like, you know, who won, what press conference won, but everybody should pick Sony.
Yeah. I mean, it's... They were pretty clear... The clear winner, I think.
It was Sony first, Bethesda second, Microsoft third. Microsoft, though, I will give them credit. They did the best this year than they have done in a little while.
Yeah, they had a strong conference.
I had more fun watching Bethesda's conference, I get it. Yeah. So from that aspect, I said Bethesda won.
And overall, I was happy to see some new IPs that looked cool.
Yeah.
I was sad to not see Prince of Persia.
But
I can forgive them. My fantasy E3 with Prince of Persia and a new King of Fighters.
Wasn't there some rumor involving SNK something fighters? I don't know.
What?
Haven't heard about it, then it didn't happen. And
that's,
crazy.
That's a good point.
Maybe it was a dream. A very good...
Came to you in a dream.
I wish I had that dream. Actually, I don't. I hate having dreams like that. And then you wake up and you're like, ah, fuck.
I gotta clean myself off. Sorry, was that...
But there's still Street Fighter V, so I can't complain.
Yeah.
That's our E3 wrap-up, though.
Yeah.
That's Jack, thanks for coming this week.
Thanks for having me.
We hope that you can come back some other time.
That would be baller.
And chat with us. Phil, if you're out there, we miss you.
Wherever you are.
Send a flare.
Yeah, send a flare. And be careful with your ice cream cones.
Just be careful.
I hope that he got another one after the bird took it.
I do too.
Everybody ice cone safely.
Yeah.
You think he cried?
No, I bet he teared up though. A little bit.
You got a little emotional.
Yeah, you got a little emotional.
Just kind of choked it back, though.
Help us find Phil.
We're putting up posters of him.
Yeah, we'll put up posters of him. But thank you for listening. If you would be so inclined, we would appreciate if you follow us on Twitter to keep up with all our going-ons. That's @pixel_chicken. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/pixelchickenpodcast. Send us your emails if there's questions you have or things you want us to talk about. If you want to know what we think about a certain game, pixelchickenpodcast@gmail.com. Or you just want to talk shit about us.
Send Phil dick pics.
Send Phil dick pics. Any of those things.
He probably needs them right now.
Yeah. What?
I don't know where I was going with that.
That's okay. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you had fun with all the E3 news. We will see you again next week.
Made sense at the time.